Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 9:53 p.m. and that is British Summer Time. And today is July 25th. Well, I thought that today we'd kick off with the 10-year Treasury yield. It's pretty steady ahead of the Fed's interest rate decision tomorrow, and it is increasingly likely that they will raise rates by 25 basis points. So that could put some upward pressure on the yield in the short term because there was the clear expectation about 3 or 4 months ago that we'd already be well past the peak of the interest rate cycle at this stage, and that hasn't yet occurred. So there's obviously then the speculation about where will the peak of the interest rate cycle actually be. And there's, I think, a clear understanding, or at least a consensus within the stock market community, that this is probably going to be the last, if not, then probably the second last of the interest rate hikes. So the S&P 500 was in positive territory today, coming back up into the region of the peak from about the middle of last week, and it's still a fairly consistent advance. We have a sequence of higher reaction lows. The size of the reactions has become progressively smaller over the last few months relative to the volatility that we had from November onwards to about March. And of course, we are then also coming into the region of the peak from all the way back in the very beginning of last year. Now, it's also worth highlighting that the vast majority of the performance that has been put into the S&P 500 has come from the Fangman shares. So, as we look at the performance of those shares relative to the entire market, well, then we have had a really storming rebound. And they've got all the way back up to the 24%-ish level relative to the entire market cap, and that is still holding in the region above the all-time peaks. So that's been really quite profound, but it's also worth highlighting that it hasn't really continued to improve since the beginning of June. So then when we look at the performance of the advanced decline line for the NYSE, so we're looking at those 8 mega cap companies relative to everything on the NYSE. It is worth just looking at the fact that the advanced decline line has rebounded and it is now at a new recovery high. Now, it hasn't yet approximated the peak from back in 2021, but it is improving. And that helps to illustrate the point that the breadth of the recovery is also improving. But what that basically also means is that since the vast majority of the performance in the first half of the year came from just 7 shares, then it is quite likely that the most performance in the stock market will come from the other 90-something percent of the shares in the back half of the year. And we have seen some fairly big downward dynamics in companies in that rarefied group. So we had the big downside dynamic in Tesla, and then it rebounded yesterday, and it was in positive territory in here today. Or sorry, that's in after hours trading. I should remember that. So not quite in positive territory today, and it's strictly speaking broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So there's certainly the potential here that we could have some additional pause and consolidation. Now, of course, we've also come through the rebalancing of the Nasdaq weightings. So we've had a little bit of moving around there. And then Apple, for example, it did get almost up to test the psychological $200 level 5 sessions ago, and then subsequently hasn't really gone anywhere. And then Microsoft, having released its pricing for its AI system that's compatible with its existing tools, the share popped and then came back down, but it has steadied over the last day or two. And I suspect that we are going to get some additional consolidation here. Now, if the incredible outperformance of these large cap companies is unsustainable through the back half of the year, or that the other portions of the market are able to stage a recovery, then we could easily see some fairly significant rotation. So when we think about the kinds of companies that could be in that category, well, then Unilever, for example, with a new CEO and beginning to talk about how they can sidestep the culture wars and concentrate more on the unique attributes of their companies, well, then it has popped on the upside, and what they are starting to talk about is reducing prices in order to encourage demand. And lo and behold, that would be rather deflationary. And what we're starting to see is that customers are responding to it. In other words, customers respond to sales, and if whenever anything goes on sale, well, then the number of people buying it go up. And I think that was something that lots of companies forgot during the pandemic, because they got to charge whatever they wanted because consumers were flush with cash and had nothing to do. And flush with cash mixed with boredom relate or just translates into spending. So this is the second company in 2 days that we've had talking about cutting prices, because Ryanair did the same thing yesterday. Now, they're both European companies, and of course, the standard of living crisis has been particularly acute. One thing that I've been very aware of visiting with my father and brother, and now up here in Dublin with my sister, is they've all turned off their heating for the summer. And you can do that in Ireland. It's pretty mild during the summer, and you can survive without the heating. Obviously, I'm from a warmer place, so I generally turn the heating on, but and we generally at home keep our house pretty toasty. So it's a bit of a culture shock for us as we come here. But what we can definitely see is that the companies are starting to play into the parsimony of consumers as they deal with the cost of living crisis. And that is the kind of thing that helps to contribute to lower inflation. When companies begin to cut their prices, then in fact, that kind of helps to stir deflationary forces. And I do think that it's more likely than not that inflation is going to continue to go down and then subsequently continue going down, so that an inflation problem turns into a deflation problem. Now, of course, I've been banging on about that for 6 months, and it has been preciously slow in actually being delivered. But that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It simply means that I'm early. And we're definitely seeing that some of the laggards in the market are beginning to gain some attention. And of course, one of the sectors that is most interest rate sensitive are the dividend aristocrats, because they have a wonderful record of raising dividends. It's just that they don't tend to raise them by much, and that means that they get to hold on to that record of raising dividends. So when interest rates are low, they become very attractive, but they don't raise their dividends at nearly the pace that the central banks have been raising theirs, and that has contributed to some underperformance over the course of the last 12 months. But now the S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats Index, ETF, excuse me, is pushing on the upside, and it has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and this is looking like an improving trend overall. But of course, what that is also assuming is that the peak of the interest rate cycle is either in or approaching. And certainly the long-dated treasury yield is also reflecting that. Now let's then just spin that out and look at the UK, for example. So the 10-year gilt yield spiked with the pensions crisis back in September, and then went to a new high in early July and failed. And now it is coming back down into the underlying range. Now, there is the real potential that this is a failed upside break. And if that is the case, well, we should anticipate that yields would come all the way back down and test the 3.25% level, and that would be below the 200-day moving average. So I do think it is quite likely that the peak of inflation for the UK is upon us. And certainly, politicians will be praying that's the case because they have to hold an election within the next 12 months, and it is looking quite likely that the Conservatives will be absolutely eviscerated. Of course, that's irrelevant to what happens in the bond market because the bond vigilantes basically chastised a prime minister and had her kicked out in September, or I guess October. And now the bigger question is, it doesn't really matter who, or the bigger point is, it doesn't matter who is in charge because they will still have to comply with the dictates set out by the bond markets. That's one of the problems when you have a big debt load and a constant need for buying, or I guess selling new bonds. Now, let's also just pay attention to what's happening in Israel. So the Tel Aviv 100 or 125 popped on the upside last week and then started to come back down again this week. They've just passed their, I guess, law weakening at the power of the Supreme Court. And I think that the challenge that Israel has right now is that they've got a two-tier society. And I don't think anybody thinks it's right or fair, except for, of course, the people that who get to benefit from it, that most of the citizens have to show up for military service, but if you're a conservative religious student, you don't. And that is only the thin end of the wedge when it comes to the kinds of disparities that you have within the society. And now you have a group of people in charge who are attempting to deal or try to weaken the power of the independent judiciary. Now, the central tenets of good governance from the stock market's perspective are the respect for minority shareholder interests, and then a judiciary that is independent so that you can take your grievance to court and have your case heard fairly. And then you also need to have an independent and free press. So Israel has been one of the strong governance areas in the Middle East for a long time and has benefited enormously as a result of that. Now the bigger question is whether it can hold itself together as it moves down the road of, or I guess, modernizing, and we're into several generations beyond the country founders. This is, I think, something that it should be paid attention to because Israel is a relatively new country, and they are obviously having teething pains with trying to figure out exactly how to think about what the future of the country looks like. And of course, then you also have Singapore, and Singapore is also a new country. And it's still run by the same family, even though Lee Kuan Yew has died, but he hasn't died all that long ago. So Singapore will, over the next several decades, also try to figure out what kind of country it's going to be. Where will the equanimity sit within the country? How will they preserve the fairness across racial and religious divides? And how will they preserve the needs and rights and opportunities for the domestic population relative to the continued inward pressure of foreign investment and foreign residents? So obviously these are other questions, and then I think it's also quite likely that South Korea will probably have to go through this same kind of issue. Now, they have been living next to North Korea for an awfully long time, and the detente has been in place for a long time, and the war is not officially over. But they also are going through an I guess a change of culture. Many of the people who were there and in charge during the 1950s have died, and now the country has to come to terms with what to do about the situation. So I think these are also the similar kinds of questions that lots of countries will be going through, and markets will inevitably parse through the various arguments and come out with an answer for which will be the best places to put money. And I think it will very clearly reflect those three tenets that you need to have respect for minority shareholder rights. And then you need to have an independent judiciary, and a free press is exceptionally beneficial if you want to be able to hear about what the problems are. Well, of course, a country like China doesn't have any of that. So what you end up having to do is paying attention to what the government says and then deciding whether you want to put faith in it. So the CSI 300 was popping on the upside in here today. It bounced again from the lower side of its range, and it's now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And it really does need to break that downtrend. Now, it might do it this time, but I think considering the number of false dawns we've had, it's probably more likely we'll have to sustain a move up and through that 1,000-day moving average in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I've been paying attention to China Vanke, and I also highlighted it yesterday because it had broken on the downside. So I think it is prudent now to pay attention to it since it popped on the upside by about 10% in here today. But it's also worth just considering that that's an it is working on an upside weekly key reversal, and you have to zoom in a lot in order to see it because it has fallen so much already. It could rally by another dollar, so maybe let's call that another 10%, give or take. And that would then approximate the region of the 200-day moving average. It could even sustain a move above it. Now, if it can do that, well, then the next area of potential resistance would be the 1,000-day moving average. But at least if it can sustain a move up through the $14 level, it would be breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. And that would certainly help to illustrate that it's not just talk from the Chinese government, but they're actually willing to do something about the malaise that you have right now in the property sector. So I think it is also just worth keeping an eye on the Hang Seng Property Index because it has put in a higher reaction low, and that's also a weekly ups an upside weekly key reversal, and it could easily unwind the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and I think then we'll see whether the Chinese government is willing to actually follow through. The problem, of course, that the Chinese government have is that if they solve the short-term problem with the same methods that they've done to solve problems in the past, they'll end up with an even bigger longer-term problem, and they don't seem willing to do that. So it does look likely there will be stimulus, but probably not in nearly the scale that we've seen in the past. And then, meanwhile, India is ticking a lot of more of the boxes in terms of governance, and then it is also exhibiting clear relative strength compared to China. And the total return on Indian equities dwarfs that of Chinese equities over the long term. Now, of course, when you have China being so oversold in the short term, there is the potential that China will outperform in the near term. But without the clear trend of governance and open markets behind it, then it's going to always be a risky place to park money over the long term because just a simple change of a diktat from a central government official can send the market reeling. And that's not something that anybody can really predict with reliability. So then, as we think about the wider market, let's also then just pay attention to the fact that interest rates are tightening, and the savings that have been set aside from the pandemic are still in place. But even though we have tighter monetary conditions, oil prices are popping on the upside. So we've now seen oil. break up through the $80 level, and it is now approaching the $85 level. And this is a clear break higher. So it has now sustained a move up and through the 200-day moving average. It's breaking the downtrend. Now, it would really require a clear downward dynamic in order to confirm a change, or I guess a resumption of the downtrend. If we have a surging oil price environment, then that is going to siphon liquidity out of the global market, and it's going to be the equivalent of additional rate hikes. So, the two things that generally most reliably contribute to recessionary environments is surging energy prices and surging interest rates. And at the moment, we only have one. If oil prices pop on the upside, we could have both. And that is the kind of thing that will start to really create pressure. But it's also likely to ignite a more, let me just put up the spider ETF, a more benign investment environment for these energy shares. And the XLE has additionally popped on the upside in this week. So it's clearly now bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this rangy environment that was looking like a potential top only a couple of weeks ago is now looking more like a consolidation. With additional stimulus and the possibility that the infrastructure sector in China will get some kind of assistance, then copper prices were also in positive territory today. So we've got this range that's been underway now for several months. It looks like a type 2 top formation with a period of right-hand extension. But now the question, of course, is where the stimulus is. If we get a lot of stimulus from China, then this will be a range rather than a period of right-hand extension, and we could easily see higher prices. I think most importantly, copper has to sustain a move up through the $4 area once more. If it can do that, I think that will help to assuage some of the doubts that people have about the sustainability of the copper rebound. But then, on top of all of that, we have the war that continues to rage in Ukraine. And there are clear efforts underway by Russia to try and destroy Ukraine's export potential for its agriculture sector. So wheat prices were not up in a dynamic manner today, but still rebounding. Now we're still in an environment where there are ample global supplies. So obviously, global supplies will have an effect on prices in the short term. But if export potential is destroyed, well, then that's going to impact the future of the global supply situation. I remain long of rough rice contracts because I think that it's meaningful that India is no longer exporting and that Pakistan is having difficulties. But then we also have the El Nino gathering, so that's likely to put a dent in global supply. I also know that it's been particularly hot in Texas, where I normally spend my time, and also it's been wetter this spring and summer than it was over the last couple of years. And that holds out the possibility that some of the rice crops will get damaged. So we did have some pause in here today, and I've got an in-the-money stop, so I'm not especially worried about it. If it pulls back and I see another upward dynamic, I'll probably buy more. And I think that when I look at oats, I am most encouraged by the chart pattern without having any specific knowledge about the trajectory of the crop, other than that most of the oats come from Canada and they've had a lot of fires up there. And smoke damage on crops is a potential outcome. But that's pure speculation on my behalf rather than having any particular evidence to to support it. But we've definitely seen a break of the downtrend, and the price perhaps could now consolidate. But as long as it's holding the region of the 200-day moving average, well, then this is a recovery. And we've seen several of the commodities finding support in the region of the upper side of their underlying base formations. So we are potentially now in a commodity-led inflationary environment. And it was commodity inflation that moderated and helped to bring down the original inflation. It could easily contribute to lower economic output, and that could really accelerate the broad deflation of the post-pandemic bubbly environment. And of course, then commodity price inflation can also lead to broader deflationary forces, which lead to commodity price deflation as well. So it's not all good news that commodity prices are rebounding in here. Then, of course, gold. It's hard to say that you can have a bull market in commodities without gold participating. And the price is steady right now, around the $1,950 area. It hasn't really broken on the upside just yet. And I think that is going to be dependent on exactly what happens with the dollar. And the dollar index is in mildly negative territory right now, but it was in positive territory yesterday, and now it's approaching, or at least it's testing the region of resistance around the 102 level. I think that we are looking at a major top for the dollar, and that it could trend lower for several years, and that is likely to ignite greater interest in the commodity complex more generally, and also in emerging markets. It could easily contribute to a change of the investment focus, where the vast majority of money has either been drawn into the USA or stayed there. And if the dollar starts trending downwards in a more convincing fashion, then we're going to see a massive exodus. That could contribute to a bottom in yields well above where the yields on treasuries were several years ago. And I suspect that is the most likely scenario, that we'll have deflation and we'll have yields come down, but they will not go back down to zero. And that instead, we will see a higher reaction low for yields. And that could then contribute to a really quite rangy environment overall, and the end of the secular bear in treasury yields. But then we would have to see inflation really surge on the upside later to push a new inflation environment. At the moment, I think the most likely scenario is that we get yields coming down over time, and then subsequently we get a rebound and more ranging. And then exogenous factors would have to contribute to greater inflationary pressures. If, on the other hand, central banks have finally figured out that they are more likely to get the kind of results they want from dealing in liquidity and the size of their balance sheets rather than meddling with interest rates. We could be into a more of a monetarist's central bank policy environment. And that would mean then that the importance of interest rate hikes would be deprioritized by the Fed, and that they would be much quicker to act with the size of their balance sheet. I think that's a not unreasonable potential outcome from everything that's gone on over the last decade. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.